Good morning. On today's programme, concern in the UK's automotive industry over plans to phase out petrol and diesel cars, and anger in Nigeria over the spiralling cost of mobile phone bills. But first we go to West Africa. This week in Togo, 14 people accused of taking part in demonstrations against the Togolese regime in 2018 and who have been in prison since their arrest were sentenced to 10 years in prison. Among them was an Irish citizen, Abdul Aziz Goma. According to Mr. Goma's lawyers and campaigners, he has been wrongfully detained, tortured, and ill-treated. Caitlin Kelly reports from West Africa.
I don't really know how to describe the conditions in prison, but I can assure you that it's hellish. I can assure you that it's worse than hell. Those are the words of Irish citizen Abdul Aziz Goma, writing from his prison cell in Togo in 2020. Unable to walk due to injuries from his torture, Abdul has been held for 6 years without trial, until Monday when he finally had his day in court. At the Lomé Criminal Tribunal, 14 people were convicted of plotting against state security and criminal conspiracy for their alleged role in a banned demonstration in 2018. Abdul was one of them, sentenced to 10 years in prison, a charge that multiple NGOs have since condemned given the unfair nature of the trial. According to Abdul's lawyer, Ferdinand Amazuhun, no material evidence was presented, and he says not a single fact was proven. Abdul lived in Ireland from the 1990s, moving between Kildare, Dublin and Roscommon. Since the mid-2010s, he's been in the UK for business, frequently travelling to Togo. In late 2018, while in Lomé to track a shipment, he was caught up in the country's political turmoil. A friend in Ghana had reached out, asking if he could help 8 young Togolese nationals who had travelled to Lomé for a demonstration. Between 2017 and 18, protesters across Togo condemned the Nazingbe family's decades-long rule after the family seized power in a 1967 coup and have held on since. Abdul found the group of young people lodgings, and when the march was banned due to a government crackdown on opposition, he provided them with money to return home. On December 21st, Abdul was ambushed by armed men in plain clothes, handcuffed on the spot and taken away without explanation. 10 days later, he was formally charged with criminal conspiracy and undermining the internal security of the state. He was held without access to a lawyer or his family and was tortured in a secret detention facility. Mary Lawler, the Irish-born UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights Defenders, has been following Abdul's case for years and condemned this week's sentence on humanitarian grounds. It's really shocking that a man has been given a 10-year sentence for a simple act of kindness, she tells me, referring to Abdul's support of the protesters, an act that qualifies him as a human rights defender, a term for individuals protected under international human rights law, which recognises the right to promote and protect human rights and freedoms. It's part of a creeping trend of criminalising solidarity and humanitarian assistance that we see all over the world, she adds, going on to say that part of her role is to distinguish between a human rights defender and a so-called criminal. She has taken on the cases of nearly 100 human rights defenders across 17 countries since 2020. According to written testimony, Abdul was blindfolded, deprived of food and water, handcuffed to cars and trees, and severely beaten. A 2023 medical exam reports severe nervous system damage, which leaves him unable to walk unaided. Isidore Collins from the World Organization Against Torture says the psychological impact of the mock executions Abdul also endured will be long-lasting. Isidore says his team already has open investigations into the unit that arrested Abdul. We're talking about a group specialized in torture to suppress civil rights, he says, referring to what is known as the Togolese Special Intervention Unit of the Gendarmerie. Abdul also spent time at Lomé Civil Prison, notorious for overcrowding and life-threatening conditions, a facility that the UN has recommended for closure. More broadly, international bodies, including the UN and EU, have condemned Togo's treatment of political dissidents and prison conditions. The Togolese Ministry of Justice did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Much of Abdul's story reaches me through Barbara Nichiosen, a Dublin-born professor at the University of Toulouse. She first learned of his case by chance 4 years ago, and felt compelled to help a fellow Irish citizen. Since, Barbara has written to Irish parliamentarians and led efforts to raise awareness, coordinate advocacy, and fundraise for Abdul's medical care, sometimes covering the cost herself. She's brought together individuals from rights organisations like Freedom Now and the Irish Council for Prisoners Overseas. Losing sleep over the trial this week, Barbara describes how deeply personal it's all become. He's a friend now, she says. Barbara believes Irish citizens should also be concerned for Abdul. She describes the guilt she feels about her privileges, knowing the horror Abdul is enduring. I'm lying here in a warm bed and I've had a good meal. And Abdul is in that prison cell and there's nothing I can do to help him. Referring to her 17-year-old son, Sean, she says she wants him to understand why this kind of work matters. Because if you don't step up for things like this, then what do you stand for? She adds. In a written response, the Irish government said it's been actively involved with the case from the outset and has engaged with the relevant local authorities via the appropriate diplomatic channels. At the trial, an Irish official was reportedly present, according to Abdul's campaign team. Barbara says this brought Abdul comfort. For now, Abdul's supporters remain uncertain about the next step. Appeal and risk aggravating the court or hope for a pardon during Togo's national holiday. According to a doctor's note from October 2023, Abdul's condition cannot be managed in Togo. Barbara explains that the priority is to get him out of prison and then out of Togo, both for medical care and his own safety. Tearing up, she says, I would jump on a plane just to meet him in person and give him a big hug. This is Caitlin Kelly for World Report from Senegal, West Africa.
To the United Kingdom next, where a plan to phase out vehicles powered by diesel and petrol in 2030, 5 years earlier than originally scheduled, has raised alarm in the automotive industry. It comes as sales of electric cars have not grown by as much as expected, and manufacturers are being forced to spend billions on discounts to convince drivers to buy an EV. The British government is consulting the views of the industry before speeding up the move towards zero emissions. That industry is warning that a mandatory move to stop selling diesel and petrol cars in 2030 could lead to the closure of factories and job losses, as Russell Padmore reports now from London.
The car industry has been investing billions in new technology for a future where we drive electric vehicles. But sales of EVs skidded off course in the last year, forcing the industry to review the pace of the transition to electric cars and vans. The Labour government came into office last year with plans to revive the ailing British economy, such as creating green industries, notably offshore wind power projects. It's part of efforts to combat climate change by reducing carbon emissions. Almost 2 million new cars were sold in the UK last year, and about one in five were electric. But the growth in sales isn't fast enough to reach a target of 100% within 10 years. And it would certainly be challenging if the target date was brought forward to 2030, which is the aim of the government. The industry knows that many motorists still need to be convinced about the merits of electric cars and vans. Concerns about range and the slow rollout of charging points persist. The automotive industry employs 152,000 and it's worth £19 billion, almost €23 billion to the British economy. So mandatory targets on sales of EVs, threatening to push the car makers off course, could undermine the efforts to boost the economy. In November, Stellantis, which owns Fiat, Citroën, Peugeot, Opel and Vauxhall, announced the closure of its electric van factory in Luton, citing the impact of the government zero-emission vehicle, or ZEV, mandate. That policy requires 22% of cars and 10% of vans sold in the UK every year to be electric. Failure to meet the targets leads to fines for the manufacturers. The government is considering subsidising purchases of electric cars by guaranteeing loans to consumers, which would reverse the withdrawal of subsidies in 2022. One of the big concerns for motorists about EVs is finding a place to charge it. No problem in Norway, a leader in EV ownership where 9 in 10 cars are electric. Whereas here in the UK, motorists have about 37,000 charging locations, too few to reassure drivers who are sceptical about EVs. Ireland has fewer than 3,000 charging points, and the country may struggle to comply with the European Union's aim to phase out petrol and diesel-powered cars by 2035. Last year in Ireland, sales of electric vehicles fell by almost a quarter compared to 2023. The cost of switching to making only zero-emissions vehicles was highlighted 2 years ago when that iconic British brand, Jaguar Land Rover, unveiled plans to spend $18 billion on the transition over 5 years. However, Mercedes-Benz has delayed that transition, predicting that half of its cars will be fully electric or hybrids by 2030. Sales of battery-powered cars in the European Union have overtaken diesel models, but overall in December, EV sales declined. In Germany, registrations of new electric cars dropped by more than a third compared to December a year earlier. And in France, sales declined by 20%. According to the European Automobile Manufacturers Association, EVs had a market share of almost 14%. The EU is also introducing tighter restrictions this year on so-called NOx emissions from cars, which means additional costs for manufacturers to install more efficient exhausts and filters that could steer the industry towards electric vehicles. The outcome of the consultation with the automotive companies here, which runs until mid-February, will show if the industry has enough clout to persuade the government to reconsider its plan to phase out petrol and diesel-powered cars in 2030 rather than 2035. The car makers are also urging the government not to drive its green policies too quickly in case they pull the handbrake on profits, which would endanger jobs in factories and undermine efforts to restart the stalled British economy. This is Russell Padmore for World Report in London.
Finally, we go to Nigeria, where the government has increased telecommunications tariffs on calls and data to 50% due to global inflation and rising operational costs. The sharp increase has left many Nigerians angry about the price hike. With the current economic crisis, inflation, high fuel prices and expensive electricity, this increase has placed an extra burden on customers. Nigeria has the largest mobile phone market in Africa, with nearly 140 million subscriptions in 2024, and the telecom sector is a large part of the economy, as Polum David reports now from Abuja.
Peace Amaogo runs an online business and takes professional courses using the internet. Last week, she spent 15,000 naira on 80 gigabytes of data, thinking it would last her a whole month. But to her surprise, the data finished in less than a week. She complained bitterly about how quickly her data gets used up, even though she uses only basic work apps and light social media. Every few days, she has to recharge, and the cost is becoming unbearable for her. But Peace is not alone. Millions of Nigerians are facing the same problem. Social media is flooded with people complaining about how quickly their data disappears compared to how much they pay for it. And now, things have gotten even worse. Nigeria's government has increased the prices of calls, data and SMS by 50%. Telecom companies in Nigeria like MTN, Airtel, Glo and Nine Mobile explained why the prices went up. They said inflation, rising cost of running their businesses, and the need for expensive upgrades to meet demand left them with no choice. They even asked for a 100% price increase, but the government only approved a 50% hike. The Nigerian Communications Commission said the increase is supposed to help telecom companies improve their services. They hope it will lead to better network coverage, faster internet speeds, and more reliable customer support. The Global System for Mobile Communications Association, a global telecom group, supported the tariff increase, saying it will unlock investments and allow millions more Nigerians access the internet. According to them, the new prices will generate 1.6 trillion naira in tax revenue and bring online services like education, healthcare, e-commerce, and mobile banking to all areas. They believe that this will also expand 4G coverage to 94% of the country and connect about 9 million more people to the internet. However, many Nigerians are angry about the price hike. With the current economic crisis, inflation, high fuel prices, expensive electricity, and rising food costs, the increase feels like an extra burden. Most workers in Nigeria earn less than 63,000 naira a month, making it hard for them to afford these changes. The Nigeria Labour Union had announced plans to protest, calling the new prices unjust and insensitive. They say workers and ordinary Nigerians were already suffering under the harsh economic conditions, and this increase is a bit too much for them to bear. Other groups, like the Socioeconomic Rights and Accountability Project, SERAP, have gone to court, calling the price hike unconstitutional and unfair. Meanwhile, Government representatives say they are working on improving internet access. Plans include laying 90,000 kilometers of fiber optic cables, building telecom towers in remote areas, and protecting undersea cables that connect Nigeria to the internet. They say these efforts will improve connectivity, bring faster and better services, and make sure more people have access to the digital world. Nigeria has the largest mobile market in Africa, with nearly 140 million mobile subscriptions as of 2024. The telecom sector has been a big part of the economy, contributing about 16% to the national GDP. But even this industry is facing challenges. In the first quarter of 2024, the sector's contribution to the GDP dropped by 12.6% to 2.67 trillion naira, showing how tough things are. Foreign investment in telecoms has also fallen sharply, dropping by 87% in the third quarter of 2024 compared to the second quarter. Despite these challenges, the hope is that the government and telecom companies can work together to find a balance. Nigerians say they need affordable communication services without sacrificing quality. For now, the struggle continues for people like Peace and millions of other Nigerians. For World Report in Abuja, Nigeria, I am Polum David.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.